So we didn't finish our seminar on Vanashram Dharma, and I thought I'd take this one last opportunity to wrap up some of those loose ends. Did we discuss the role of women in Vanashram Dharma? Anybody remember? Yes? Okay. All right, then. Let's see what... Okay, then, turn it down a little bit. Did we discuss the difference between Vanashram Dharma and Daiva Vanashram? Is everybody clear on that? Okay. How about the economics of Vanashram Dharma? No? Yes. The political organization of Vanashram Dharma? No. Okay. How about the difference between modern culture and Vanashram culture? Unless I get a definitive yes, then it's no. Everybody's scratching their head. Maybe. Okay. Let's talk about the differences between modern culture and Vanashram culture, because we need to have some reason, some motivation that we should take up Vanashram culture. And as long as we're satisfied with the status quo, then why do that? Why take trouble to change everything if we're going to be satisfied? So we have to understand that what the benefits are of the Vanashram culture that we don't have in modern society. And one of the big ones is that the benefits of Vanashram Dharma are the intangible things that people actually value in life. Time for oneself, time to see one's children, raise them, to have nice relationships, to have work that one actually likes to do. These things are all intangible, whereas modern society gives us tangible benefits. We get a smartphone or a laptop or a nice car or things like that. So we get the tangibles in modern society, the material things, but we don't get the things that are actually give people the most meaning in life, which is the relationships with others, particularly relationships with their children. In the United States, I read, people now spend more time shopping than they do with their children. Okay? Misplaced values. Okay. So that's one of the big differences. And people are very stressed in modern society. They don't have time. They're very much pressured for doing all the things that they're trying to fit in their schedule. And so there's a lot of stress from that. So Vanashram Dharma also frees one from such stress. Now, another one is freedom versus commitment. Now, in the United States, there's a lot of emphasis, or let's say the indoctrination is made about freedom, that we have a lot of freedom, especially America. They're crazy about that. Yes, we're free. Actually, they're not free at all. Freedom, one has 10 times as much freedom in India as you do in the United States. But anyway, they have this idea. So people think that they're free and that they want also to have individual freedom rather than commitment. So we see that couples, now they no longer even get married, because they don't want to make the commitment. They want to be able to stay free. So there's a big trade-off there. You can't have one without the other. And the thing is, what you get from commitment is you get very close relationships. You get very tight relationships. But you have to give up freedom to do that. So the example is the Pandava brothers, who were so tight that nobody could separate them. And so close they were, they even shared one wife. But they had to give up their freedom for that. So the younger brothers, they followed the lead of Yudhisthira, even when he was gambling away the kingdom, gambling away the wife, etc. But still, they didn't say anything. They accepted what he did. So this is a big difference, that because with the commitment, you get security. If a couple makes a commitment to each other, then they have emotional security. But if they don't make that commitment, then the relationship is perhaps always in jeopardy. My son, who was living in France for some time, was telling me that it's not uncommon there for a married couple. They'll be married, but he will have his lover and she will have her lover. So what kind of commitment is that? There's really no commitment, and the whole thing may be jeopardized at any moment. So you have insecurity. You have freedom, but you don't have security. So the idea is that in the Varnashram culture, that there's a commitment, that the Varnas and the Ashrams, they voluntarily have a commitment to each other based on religious principles, that they have Dharma, they have their duty according to Dharma, and that duty requires them to give service, to render service to the other Varnas and Ashrams. But it's voluntary. It's not something that's forced, because for spiritual life, there must be freedom. So, people use that freedom to make a commitment to each other, and that way they have great security. They have very good emotional security. They don't have any, there's no fear about one's losing their house, about being homeless, about being jobless, about all of these problems that may arise in modern society. Those things are absent in the Varnashram culture. So again, it's a non-tangible, but in order to achieve that, one has to be willing to make the commitment. Now, another important difference is that of having a place. That everybody requires a place, basically a place from which to grow. And we use the example of a potted plant, such as Tulsi Devi. Tulsi has a pot, that's her place. She has soil, a medium to grow in, and she requires, aside from that, a certain amount of light, air, and water. So the same thing for us. We need a place. It means a physical place. We need to have a proper work activity, proper engagement, according to our guna and karma, which is the medium in which we grow. And then we need to have proper relationships with others, which gives us the sense of security, plus also those relationships, they give us they give us place, actually. Let's put it that way. I learned a lot about this when I first went from the United States to stay in Ukraine. That was a little over 10 years ago. And there, as a senior devotee, just like here, You all very nicely afford me respect. So the devotees did there also. And this was a very significant experience for me, because what happened was, because they honored me in that way, I was able to rise up more to be what I could be. Just like a child is growing. If the parents expect something from that child, or the teachers expect something, then the child will naturally rise up to what's expected from them. This is true for everybody, actually. In the United States, a Prabhupada disciple has no special position. They do not have this culture there. And the result is, nobody expects anything from you, so you don't become anything. So it's a very significant experience for me to see how the difference in culture created a difference in what I was able to do. I would be amazed that I could give classes and things would come out of my mouth that were amazing to me, and far, far better than what I could, the classes I could give if I was invited to give a class in the United States. So that was very significant. So these relationships are also very, very important. And those relationships, again, are based on both Varna and Ashram. Then the two cultures, they have different purposes. The modern society is created for the purpose of sense gratification. It's organized. It's designed purposely for sense gratification, and that's the whole idea. People are always right. If you go someplace, they tell you, you go to a restaurant, then they bring your food. They tell you, enjoy. Right? That's a very common thing that everybody wants to be enjoying. But the purpose, of course, of the Vanashram culture, the Daiva Vanashram culture, is for Krishna to enjoy. And for the individual members of society to be able to develop both materially and spiritually. So modern society does not facilitate that, because there's demands always for money and getting more and more. One other thing about this place is it makes your life personal. Modern society is impersonal, very impersonal. So we pray to Prabhupada, Namaste Sarasati Deve Gaurvani Pacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Pasityade Sitarani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, voidism and impersonalism. That Prabhupada has saved us from this voidism and impersonalism. So how is that? By giving us an identity, a spiritual identity, not connected with the body. And in the Vanashram culture, when one has a place, they're free from this impersonalism and this voidism. So that's another very significant aspect. People in modern society, not knowing who they are and being bewildered by life, they're lost to themselves. They don't know what to do with themselves. They have no idea how to behave, what to do, what not to do. We hear crazy things, like there was one man in the United States who won the lottery, some many millions of dollars. So he put $1 million in a briefcase, and he would always carry it around with him for some reason. It's such a foolish thing, just carrying around $1 million all the time. Maybe it gave him a sense of being a millionaire or something, but, you know, he didn't know what to do with it. He's got all this money, what to do with it? He's completely bewildered. And so this is, of course, the downside of modern civilization, is people not knowing any purpose in life. They don't know what to do. They're their own worst enemy. They get involved in things that are degrading. And most of them, Prabhupada says, are going to hell. They develop mental problems, because the society doesn't give them any security, any place. 25% of the people in the United States are taking psychotropic medication, if you can imagine. So, again, the Vanashram culture, the benefits are non-tangible. And we shouldn't wait until we're all practically in the crazy house before we try to develop it. We should actually create this alternative for happy living, which is what Prabhupada wanted. Any questions on that? Yes. I'm having a difficult time hearing you.
What is the benefit of intensive preaching of Varnashram? When obviously, since we don't have one successful example in this
world, what's the purpose of preaching about it? Well,
because one of the devotees benefit, since we don't have the system, and since you won't be having it in one time soon,
The leaders, the GBC, you know, we have a part of the ISKCON leadership project is what they call the, how do they call it? They wouldn't even allow us to call it Varnashram Dharma. They call it something like rural living or something like that. But when I participated in that, about 4 or 5 years ago, they were saying, yes, we need to know more about Vanashram Dharma. We don't understand this well enough yet. Well, this is the point why I'm giving these seminars, is so that we understand what it is, so that we can, see the purpose of developing it. You came in a little late, but my opening remarks were exactly to that point. That unless we understand it, we can't act. So the first thing is understanding. A culture works because everybody carries the same idea of it around in their heads. So we're indoctrinated in modern culture from the time we're children. So we can function in culture almost unconsciously, or we do function unconsciously. But if we're talking about changing culture, then everybody has to have a common understanding of what that culture is and how it works. So this is the point. And the reason we do this is because Prabhupada very much wanted this. And the leaders have failed to follow this instruction of Prabhupada. In many regards, they failed. He told him at one point, he said, all the devotees should go to the farm. And the leaders that were with him there, they were objecting while Prabhupada were trying to teach them how to be Krishna conscious at home. He said, no, go to the farm. He was adamant about it, but they don't follow it. So ISKCON is meant to be the society of followers of Bhaktivedanta Swami. Right? He's our Jagat Guru. He's our Acharya. But if we don't follow him, then what's the point? Then we're using him for what? For some other purpose. So, and why? Why Vanashram Dharma? To save the world. And to save ourselves. So, we have to understand it. That's the reason I give the seminar.
It's just that I was told, for example, if you've never been to India, you don't understand the Vedic culture the same way as you would if you actually saw it or lived in it. So that's where I was coming from.
Well, okay, in terms of developing Vanashram Dharma, you need two things. You need a brahmana, qualified brahmana, who knows what it is supposed to be done. And then you need a qualified kshatriya who can do it. The kshatriya provides the chaitra. He provides the place, the environment. You know, he's just speaking about place. This is the role of the kshatriya. This is why the Pandavas, they had to have a village. Huh? Because that's what they do. They provide a place. So we don't have any kshatriyas in our society. The few that we have, of course, they're very rare men anyway. And the few that we have generally are temple presidents. Maybe one of them will sometime be inspired. So we have, for example, Sri Ram Swami. He's dedicating the rest of his life to establishing Vanashram Dharma. So hopefully, of course, he has men who are willing to follow him. So maybe one, there's a kshatriya amongst them. So maybe they can create an example to show others. Culture is learned by seeing it. And so you're right, you know, unless we go, like, if you want to know the Vedic culture, you go to India, you see it in practice, then it's much easier to understand. I've been thinking about this point, about how to do that, and I've come across the concept of, you know, this Second Life, this virtual reality game. So I was just thinking about this last week, to create a Vanashram Dharma Second Life where devotees could take different roles and role play, and then by that practice be able to learn it. So we'll see. It'll take some time, but first point is that we should understand it. And we started out the whole seminar with explaining the desire of the acharyas for establishing Vanashram Dharma. So as faithful disciples, it's our duty to fulfill the desire of our acharyas. Okay? Sorry. How about Vanashram Dharma is a process? I don't know if I explained that from the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the whole idea of Vanashram Dharma, Prabhupada said at one point, he said, Vanashram Dharma is meant to take a crude man and turn him into a pure devotee of the Lord. So it's to provide an environment where people can transform their character from being materialistic to becoming pure devotees. And Krishna gives the process for doing that in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita from text 8 to 12. And I'll read those, I'll read that. He gives it in reverse order, so I'm going to say it opposite the way it's presented in Bhagavad Gita. So the first point is that you cultivate knowledge. And then the second point is to meditate. Better than knowledge is meditation. Better than meditation is giving up some of the results of your activities for the Lord. Better than that is working for the Lord. And better than that is following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. Better than that is serving the Lord with one's everything. So, this is actually, you know, the process by which most of us, we come to Krishna consciousness. We get a book, we cultivate some knowledge, come to the temple, the devotees encourage us to chant the Maha Mantra. So we start meditating. Then we give donation, give up some of the results of our activities for the service of the Lord. Then we come to the temple, we start doing service, working for the Lord. And then in time, then perhaps move in the temple and follow the principles of bhakti yoga. So Vanashram Dharma can also be like this, can be considered like this. That in the Chaitra, in the place, people would first be encouraged to, it's just like, if we were living in a place, say there's a few devotees living in a, with a group of people who were living on the land, they would perhaps come and hear from the devotee, hear about spiritual life from him, perhaps then by understanding by, Shishi Panchatattva Ki Jai. If the devotee had the opportunity to teach them, then they could come and to his temple and start, meditating, or giving some of the results of their produce. If they're growing something, they can make some donation to the deity. So in this way, by doing the things that they normally would do, they could do them as an act of devotional service and gradually become purified. So this is the idea that Varnashram Dharma gradually transforms people from being sense gratifiers to to devotees in a gradual process. How about this? Did I explain? We have this concept of becoming a brahmana, having second initiation. We become more than a brahmana. Vaishnava is more than a brahmana. Let me explain that, just so that part is clear. Because there's this idea that we get second initiation, which we typically call brahminical initiation, and therefore then the devotee thinks, now I've become a brahmana. Well, the understanding of this is that by guna and karma, one's guna and karma, if they have a different nature, sudra, vaisya, kshatriya nature, they still have that nature, even though they have second initiation. So those, now in our Panchatriki Vidhi, our Vaishnava Siddhanta, not just the dvijas, but all, everyone, even the Shudra types or the Malechas, we can get initiation and become qualified to serve the deities. This was not the standard of Vedic culture previously. Previously, the Shudras would not receive diksha. They would not be allowed to even to chant mantras. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and our acharyas, fortunately, all of us are able to do that. So we get second initiation, and that means we have the adhikari, or the qualification then, to worship the deity according to Panchatriki Vidhi. But that does not change our guna and karma. If we had a sudra nature previously, we would still have a sudra nature. But we would have the eligibility to worship the deity as a brahmana, in fact, more than a brahmana. A brahmana is within the traditional vanashram system. The brahmanas are not actually transcendentalist. They are, let's say, performing sacrifices and so on like that. for material benefit and so on. Whereas the Vaishnava has given up those material activities, fruitive work, and is devoted all of his energies to the service of the Lord. So the Vaishnava is a transcendentalist, which is above the position of a brahmana in the Vanashram Dharma system. So then the next question is, what would be your role in Vanashram Dharma? So sometimes this is discussed that nobody wants to be a sudra. If we actually established Vanashram Dharma in ISKCON, then who would decide what my varna is? And let's say, would I be able to be who I think I am? Well, the answer is, it's very much just like a job application. We can use an example from modern society. You have the freedom to apply for any kind of job that you want, but when you apply, they're going to look at you and see what is your qualification. If you're qualified, you can get the position. But if you're not qualified, you don't. So, in the Vanashram system, the sudra's position is actually the most secure. He has the least responsibility. He has the most security. In former Vanashram Dharma, the sudras didn't even have any regulative principles. But in Devi Vanashram, there would be. We could say, yes, I think I'm a brahmana, but then you have to actually do the activities of a brahmana. You know, do you have the capacity, the capability of doing that? Studying all day long and so on like that. Are you interested in or willing, capable of doing that? So gradually people would find their own place. And the point is that we would have the freedom to do that which we love, because that's what our varna is. Whatever we love to do, that's really what our place is in the world. That's our guna and karma, and that's why we like to do it. So in modern society, people want the high position because there's more perks. You get a higher salary, you get the ability to command others and so on. But even though if they're not fit for it, they can't be happy doing such jobs. So it's the same thing in Vanashram Dharma. The materialistic people may aspire to the high position, but if you're qualified or not, if you're not qualified, you're not going to be able to stay there. Just like we see, take an example of pujaris. After devotees receive second initiation, they're very eager to do deity worship, and many devotees do. But the ones who are actually can continue with that are the ones for whom it's their guna and karma. Very few devotees can actually continue doing deity worship for years and years and years. Some, very few can. So that's an example. So we should take that position which is suitable for us according to our nature, then we'll be happy doing it. In the Vanashram system, in modern society, people aspire to these high positions because it gives them more money, which means more control over their life. In the Vanashram system, people have the security. They don't need money. They don't need position for security. So they can have that without taking an artificial position of trying to be something that they're not. Okay, I think I've covered everything. Any comments or questions? Yes.
I'm just a bit confused in one thing. When the devotee was reminding me not so long ago, he was saying something in the sense, the process Prabhupada gave us is supposed to help us evolve brahminical qualities. So basically, we are doing a process which is making all of us brahmanas. And to the degree that we are not achieving this brahminical qualification, to that degree the process is either failing us or we are not properly executing the process.
Okay, we may develop these qualities, but let's see how to explain this. If you look in Manusmita, for example, okay, and it gives the various duties of the brahmanas. So, one has to have, let's say, the brahminical position is the highest one. So one has to have a capability of a broad vision, being able to see to the welfare of others, working, thinking about the future, how to help everybody evolve spiritually, someone like this. When we get second initiation, will we develop those qualities? In time, the 26 qualities of a pure devotee should develop in a person. Okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to, we say brahminical qualities. Can we be more specific about that? Can you give list some of those qualities?
Certain degree of detachment, as I understand.
Well, detachment comes as a matter of practicing Krishna consciousness. That's a concomitant factor. So that should develop for everybody. Spiritual knowledge, everyone should cultivate spiritual knowledge, yes? Okay. So, those qualities that you mentioned, they will develop. They should develop. As one continues, if we continue to read. But, you know, actually it's, come to think of it, many devotees don't read Prabhupada's books. They're not very well versed in Prabhupada's books. And we can take that to be because they have a sudra nature, actually. So Prabhupada gave the opportunity for that, but actually who can develop that, you know, is in question. Even if one had full facility. So my position is that we are who we are, and so we should just be that. The point I was making about the brahminical initiation, it gives us the adhikari to worship the deity. Okay? The qualification to worship the deity. So one should not worship the deity without having diksha. So we have diksha, then we can worship the deity. But that doesn't mean that our guna and karma is going to change. We still are who we are. And if, or let's say, we may not develop, of course, peacefulness, self-control, maybe austerity, these kinds of qualities of the brahmana that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, those should develop in the devotee. But that doesn't mean by their mentality that they'd be able to perform the functions of a brahmana. Does that make sense?
Because if they develop the quality, then they have the mindset of a brahmana. That's my understanding.
Okay, I'm trying to make the point that there's different work. Okay, let's call it work instead of activities. Brahmanas, they have certain things that they do. So the brahmana is advisor to the kshatriya. by his position, he can understand the nature of people. Okay, let's back up. A fully trained Brahmana, he should know astrology, he should know Ayurveda, he should know Shastra, right? He should be a psychologist. So he understands what people are like, how the world works, and then he can give advice to the king. Well, that's one kind of Brahmana. Actually, there's, I think, 8 different kinds of Brahmanas. Some will do puja, some will do teaching, some can be advisor to the king, like this. So they have also different functions.
Because we see devotees oftentimes, hiring Prabhupada, using Prabhupada, what makes you more qualified to interpret and present Prabhupada's teachings than me, for example. Oftentimes devotees have this Prabhupada said this, that, showdowns, for example.
So you're saying one devotee is a brahminical nature, one devotee is a kshatriya nature?
But both are doing the same process, both are understanding the philosophy, both are...
Well...
What is he advising, what is his function?
No, people are not the same, okay? A man who's a kshatriya, he's actually influenced by passion. He's a can-do guy. He's active, okay? And that passion blinds them to what should be done. So they've got their own idea. Huh? So there's always this tension between the brahmanas and the kshatriyas. Because sometimes the kshatriyas, they have to correct the brahmanas. But generally the Brahman, if we read what we read in Shastra, like we were reading about Rishabhdev, he's a personality of Godhead, but he would take instruction from the Brahmanas to give example. And all the Vedic kings, they would do that. They would hear what the Brahmanas had to say and they would follow it. They don't necessarily have to follow, but if they don't, then it's on their head. So this is the point. The point is that the mode of passion blinds people to some things. Just like every leader, okay, you can take even today. Political leaders, they have advisors because nobody can see everything properly. You need to have different perspectives and hear from different people. So the ones that he would hear from, the kshatriya would hear from would be the brahmanas. The ones who are in goodness, sattva, and because of sattva, they could see things as they are. Well, that's the quality, that's the result of sattva.
I understand that. I'm just confused because you said, for example, most kshatriyas are temple presidents. Most temple presidents attend Mangala Arati, chant Hare Krishna, read the books.
Yeah.
I mean, do the process, so they're basically freeing themselves of Rajas, and they are actually established or are doing their best to be established in sattva. So that's again a Brahminical quality. So it's kind of confusing for me how this goes, how this would be done in practice.
All I can do is say it again. Every leader needs advisors. And the kshatriyas would take advice from the brahmanas, those who are situated in sattva-gun. Okay? When one is in sattva-gun, one can see things, understand things as they are. If you're in raja-gun, you cannot. That's the influence of the guna. So, and temple presidents, yeah, most of them are in raja-gun. Or they have a lot of raja-gun in order to do that job. You can't do that job without raja-gun. Huh? So, if you look back historically, you see temple presidents make mistakes. Even though they're devotees, they're going to Mangala Arati, they're doing things, right? If they're not taking advice and help from others, they'll make mistakes. So the point is to minimize the mistakes, not to make mistakes, by taking the help of others.
Okay.
Yeah.
You spoke about leaders in ISKCON, and you said that majority they are not kshatriyas. What which qualification would make them?
No, I said most of the ones, if the, let's see, of the kshatriyas that we have in the society, most of them are temple presidents.
Okay. You said that it's not a lot of kshatriyas in ISKCON.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of kshatriyas in ISKCON because kshatriya is a man who wants to be independent. Okay? And in ISKCON, independence has become somewhat of a bad word. Oh, he's independent. Right? It's like you have some kind of fault if you want to be independent. But that's the nature of the person. In some places, now ISKCON's the large society and it functions different in different places, but in some places there's the tendency of the what do they call it? The regional secretary to think that he is in a position that's above the temple president, that he should give instruction to the temple president. That, because in ISKCON we're following a corporate model. But that's actually not the way Prabhupada set up ISKCON. Prabhupada set up ISKCON so the temple presidents would be independent. But that's changing gradually in time, in some places more than others. But a kshatriya is a man, all the dwijas, they're, by nature, they're independent. Just like you take a businessman, a vaishya. He doesn't have a boss. He's the boss. You know, he's not going to work for somebody else. And what to speak of an actual kshatriya or a brahmana, they're independent. The brahmana, if the kshatriya doesn't listen to him, he says, okay, fine, see you later. He goes someplace else where he's going to be listened to. So, you know, these are independent men. And unfortunately, the way things are going in ISKCON, in some places, independence is frowned on. And so what, if that continues, then the only people that will be satisfied to stay will be those of a sudra nature. And so there become a society of sudras rather than a society of brahmanas. So it's a very delicate thing. How to manage it, to give people independence. And again, it's different in different places. I don't know what your experience here is, who your GBC is, or how they work. In America, it's very different than it is over here. Okay.
So, in which level you can give this independence to the devotees who are, like in the school, you have in the school some programs, some schedule, some policy. At the same time, children must be independent. So,
children must be independent?
Yeah, like devotees must be independent.
Why children? Children are not independent.
But young devotees are like children. They are not grown up.
Oh, young devotees. Young devotees. Okay. So, all right. Of course, until one becomes trained. But let me give you an example of that. What I mean by that. Prabhupada attracted leaders because he gave responsibility. He sent devotees with maybe even 1 year training in Krishna consciousness. He sent them to open temples in different parts of the world. Okay, Shivananda had 1 year experience in Krishna consciousness, didn't know the language, went to Germany and opened the German yatra by himself, not with anybody else. Because, you know, and Prabhupada would tell them, Krishna will help you. So they had to rise to the occasion, right? So, if they didn't have a nature for that, they couldn't do it. Okay? And we have many examples of devotees who were able to do wonderful things because Prabhupada gave them the responsibility and the freedom to be able to do that. So this is what I mean by independence. Okay? It means responsibility.
What
and freedom.
Yes. Because we see that devotees who are not still trained and dedicated, they can understand this opportunity for independence and enjoy also in the process, enjoying the devil, material independence. That's not
it. It's not perfect. Okay, even in when Prabhupada was with us, devotees would make some mistakes like that. But for example, Vishnujan Swami, Prabhupada told him open 10 temples. I forget how many he opened, but maybe he opened 10. But he was just a young man, but he was very enthusiastic, and so he would go to places and he would set up a temple, get devotees there to take care of it, and then go on and do it again. So now the society is more mature. So would we send somebody out with just 1 year experience now? Let's say, what if a man of such capability, a man of such ability came and got the basic idea and wanted to go? Should he be allowed? Well, if he has a guidance of a GBC, perhaps so. Perhaps not. But those things, you know, it's, you can't make a blanket rule. Oh, yes, you can or you can't. It depends on the individual person. I opened a preaching center when I was a devotee for 3 years. I set out, I opened up my own temple. Okay, what did I know? I thought I knew a lot. Right? But, you know, I did what we knew to do, which was book distribution, deity worship, basically that, and then little preaching in the schools.
You know, I understand this independence is empowered independence. Because Prabhupada empowered these all devotees and they were all completely dedicated to Prabhupada. So this independence is want. So we want such kind of independence.
Yeah.
But today we can see everywhere what new for devotees. Maybe we can ask devotees what made this independence for them living in the temple. I have my own schedule, I have my...
No, no, you can't do that. No, 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 that's a whole different thing. If you're living in the temple, you can't be independent. No, of course. You're taking shelter of somebody else, you have to, you know, you have to cooperate. Otherwise you have anarchy. No, independent means the leader, right? So he's just like here, Ananta, he's got a vision for how to develop this place and how to do things. So because of his vision, he can inspire others and they want to cooperate. So he needs to, in order to do that, he has to have independence, right? But if everybody tries to be independent and make the, you know, do their own thing, no, it's not going to work. No.
That is not possible.
No.
It's very hard to manage.
Okay. Okay, so today I go to Serbia for a week and I'll be back a week from today. So. I'm not sure where I'm staying though, if there's any room in the inn. Anyway, I'll be around. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.